eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Kane in the punch, it's going to be covered by the Saints for a touchdown.
It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
Jimmy Graham brings it down, and that is a touchdown, New Orleans.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
And that is going to be a touchdown again. And guess who? Mike Thomas.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Welcome inside Black and Gold. Steve Geller along with Jeff Nowak coming to you post-Combine edition. And man, oh man, next week we'll be talking free agency already. The NFL offseason is flying by.
Yes. Speaking of flying, I have flown back. As you can see, if you're watching this video, I have returned to the state of Louisiana. I almost said Connecticut. That's where I was. It's funny. It does not take that long to acclimate to different weather, right? And I spent the whole week in like 30 degrees. And then I went out and I walked a dog yesterday in jeans. And I got back and I was just dripping with sweat. It was like 68 degrees. And now it's like, I don't know. Like, it's funny. Cause by the time I left, I was like, oh, this temperature's fine. And I got back here and I was like, well, this is what humidity's like. Anyway.
Yeah, I was gonna say, sure. You're back in the loo and sweating already, right?
Yes. Yes. So I've returned. You know, we're going to get back on a normal schedule, though I do have to say I have jury duty this week. So we'll see how that goes. That might throw a wrench into our schedule. But we'll try to get back to a normal routine as much as possible. I want to do another mock draft later in the week. You know, mock draft Mondays is always the fun way to put it, but we're going to do mock draft Wednesdays or / Thursdays. So, you know, if you're a fan of alliteration, it's not a win. But we're not going to fall into that trap. It's like, oh, it's Monday. We got to do a mock. No, not us. But yeah, as you mentioned, we're post combine. I don't want to sit here and talk about the combine for one. I wasn't there. Neither were you. So I don't have anything in super insightful to tell you from what happened at the combine. And I also don't think that, you know, I think it's really easy to watch the combine and pretend you have a ton of new information. But in like 90-95% of cases, it's just telling you what you already knew, which, wow, Xavier Worthy's really freaking fast. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Great. I know. I knew that. Now I know that more. You know, there's a few defensive line prospects that I'm interested in. Braden Fisk, I thought wasn't really on my radar for the Saints. Now he is, you know, that type of thing. But generally speaking, you know, that's something we can get into in the mock draft. So I don't think we need to spend a ton of time talking about it here. But what I do want to talk about is the grades. And I mentioned in the last episode that I wanted to spend a lot more time talking about the NFLPA grades. So in the second segment, I want to go through the Saints grades and kind of dive into what they all mean, what actually was in there. And then the final segment I went through yesterday and took notes on all the F's and a few of the D's, you know, and to see what actually prompts an F grade in these rankings. There was some really good ones, a couple for the Bucks and the Falcons that, you know, when you want to talk about poverty franchises, I think we found a definition that works. So that'll be the final segment. We'll dive into, you know, the Saints got one F, but there were some too, like the Commanders got four. And so we'll dive into that. But this first segment, there's a few notes that I want to get to. The first, we hadn't talked about this because it happened late in the week. And then after we recorded our last episode, but reports are the Saints are expected to release Marcus May, safety Marcus May, at the start of the new league year. Now, if you follow this podcast, that's something I've been talking about for a while. You know, I landed on, you know, late in the season that's like, yeah, this is definitely going to be a breakup. I think, it, you know, him not coming back to play, you know, we talked about Marshawn and Mike Thomas not coming back. Marcus May also never came back. Marcus May went on injured reserve and never returned. And I don't think his injury was like anything mega significant at the time. I think it's just an indicator that the team was ready to move on. And they like Jordan Howden. They like Jonathan Abram. They like Lonnie Johnson. And you're kind of seeing that now. The experiment with Marcus May, he came in. He was kind of, people forget, you know, you signed Tyrann Mathieu and Marcus May at the same time, and they were supposed to be your replacement for Malcolm Jenkins and Marcus Williams. Now, I think Tyrann Mathieu, everyone's kind of come full circle on Tyrann Mathieu after some initial discontentment. But Marcus really never delivered. He played in 17 games over 2 years. And, you know, I think there's effort issues at times. The tackling wasn't good enough. There was a play against Bijan Robinson. I tweeted about it in that game against the Falcons that, you know, he just was not competitive, you know, and he had to make a play and instead he just fell. And it was a touchdown instead of maybe, you know, a third and medium. And that game kind of got away from him. And anyway, so here we are. The question now becomes, do you make Marcus May one of your two post-June 1 designations? You can do it twice. And that allows you to spread out a cap hit over 2 years rather than take it all at once for this dead money. And the difference is you could, if you release him outright, you'll save $1.2 million against the cap. If you push it to June 1st, you can save upward of $7 million against the cap in 2024, but that means that you now have a $6 million dead cap charge in 2025. So that's the decision. It's, do you want that cap opening immediately, first of all? So that'll get you a little closer to the $16 million they have left to clear. Or do you want to save that money this year at the expense of next year? I don't know. And you look at it and you say, okay, there's a couple other players. They could make Jameis Winston and Michael Thomas these post-June 1 designations, and you might get the same amount. So I don't know. We'll find out. It won't take that long. By the new league year, you're going to have to designate these guys. So, you know, I think that's not a surprising move, but it is one that kind of, you know, informs how you're going to be looking at this safety group going into the rest of the offseason, because as of now, the only safeties you have under contract are Jordan Howden and Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah, that's where I was going too. You know, a big thing is going to be, what do they do now at safety that, you know, your other starter is not going to be coming back? Do you elevate a guy like rookie Jordan Howden, who, right, like you just mentioned, is technically the only person under contract at the moment? Do you try to bring like someone like an Abram back as well? Or are you looking in free agency and possibly the draft at the safety position now?
I think the answer is yes to all three of those things. I think the team likes Jordan Howden, so I don't think they would have any qualms about going into year two and saying, hey, he got a lot of action. You know, he wasn't perfect at times, you know, but like you're talking about a fifth round rookie,
right,
who was learning on the job. And so you would expect, you know, that jump from year one to year two is supposed to be significant because it's the first real offseason that you have where you're not going in a million different directions, right? Things start to slow down. You get a real program in the offseason because your team knows what you did well, what you didn't do well, what you have to work on. Get a little stronger, right? You deal with you get an NFL strength program that you can really lean into. You know, the OTAs and minicamp, you're not talking about learning a new defense or learning new coaches. You're coming in. So I think ideally, you'd look at it and say, we're hopeful that Tyron obviously is going to be one starter, and then Jordan should be the you know, inside track guy, and you'll go from there. That doesn't mean you won't aggressively scout guys in the draft, because, hey, I also want to find a nickel corner who can, you know, maybe step into that role. And so maybe you look at the safety group and say, who can be our backup safety and also play the nickel, right? CJ Gardner-Johnson was a good example. He was a fourth round pick, and you ended up getting a dedicated nickel corner. So I think that's something you look at. But I also think either one or both of Jonathan Abram or Lonnie Johnson will be back. And I guess it's Jonathan Abram. You know, I think Lonnie Johnson is a very intriguing player, and they like him. So if they could bring both back, he's coming off a reasonably significant knee injury. So you'll want to see how he recovers from that before you make any decisions. But yeah, I think that's just kind of filling out the roster, and you're going to have a bunch of veterans coming in and competing like you did last year, right? Like, no one knew Jonathan Abram and Lonnie Johnson was going to have a significant role going into camp last year, but they both kind of asserted themselves. Lonnie Johnson made the roster outright. Jonathan Abram started on the practice squad, got elevated a couple times, and ended up getting signed midseason, and had a pretty big impact late in the year. So I don't know. I think I'm okay with the safety group in terms of, like, I think they're in good shape, but that's definitely a position where you're looking around saying, okay, we want to add some depth here for sure.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, like, obviously, like you mentioned, they're definitely getting some depth at the position. It doesn't necessarily vault that need of safety, though, to your early round draft picks. Well, your first and second rounders, because they don't have a third round pick at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, first is really, you don't see a lot of first round safeties to begin right. with. Like, they would have to be elite prospects. It's kind of like the guard position of the secondary, where you need them, obviously, but the positional value dictates that you can get those guys in the mid rounds. So you do. They would have to be head and shoulders elite. And that's why the Cesar Ruiz pick still kind of bugs me, because while Cesar Ruiz has turned into a capable starting guard, for it to be a first round guard, you really need that guy to be like a Quentin Nelson type, you know, yeah. a no brainer Pro Bowler. And I just don't think that's what he is. So I still kind of question that pick. That was the COVID year pick. I think they just didn't have a lot of strong, you know, strong conviction about a lot of picks, and they did on him. So anyway, let's keep going. So one guy who did, you know, we saw re-signed today is Mike Evans, back with the Bucs. They paid for him. I mean, what was the deal? I need to look it up.
I know where you're going with this. Is his daddy going to be back with the Saints?
So the Bucs signed Mike Evans on a two-year, $52 million contract, $35 million guaranteed. And, you know, that's a significant draft, or that's a significant deal. But, like, you know, you're starting to look at the wide receiver position now. And I've always said, like, the NFL's ultimate cheat code is having a quarterback on a rookie deal, even if he's a first-round quarterback, even if he's a top-five quarterback. But then you get to that second deal, and it becomes a lot harder to have that quality depth. And it's kind of getting that way with wide receivers. Like, you're talking, you know, I saw the guy from SpotRack. He projects that CeeDee Lamb, his contract is going to be something in the range of 4 years, $120 million, at 75 guaranteed. So you're talking about a $30 million a year wide receiver.
Yeah.
Right? That's crazy. And, you know, like Mike Thomas, that has jumped fast. I mean, Mike Thomas reset the market in 2019. No, it wasn't 2019. With whatever contract he signed, I think it was the 2018 season. And then 2019 was when it first hit. I can't recall. But, and his was like 5 years, $95 million. So you're talking like that. At that point, you were talking about like $19 million a year for a wide receiver. That's almost doubled in 4 or 5 seasons. So, you know, like that's hamstring. And that's why you look at the Saints and you're like, okay, you're paying Derek Carr, but your wide receivers are on, you know, manageable deals, and that helps. But so it's kind of like, okay, where do you allocate your money? How do you fit that? And, you know, are they going to end up having to pay Chris Olave that type of money in a couple of years? I don't know. You at least have that fifth year option with him that you can do, but that's a big chunk of change. And, you know, so that's 2 years, 55 for the Bucks. You know, you're talking, you know, 27, you're almost up to 35, you know, you're just shy of $30 million with that deal. So, man, you're looking at free agency and like, oh, what wide receivers can you bring in? That market is pricey.
Mike Evans, I feel like a guy obviously deserving of a big payday. You know, he hasn't been able to put up those numbers, thankfully, against the Saints, but overall, pretty consistent guy year in and year out.
Yeah, and you know, one of the reasons he hasn't been able to put up those numbers against the Saints is the Saints have had Marshawn Lattimore, yeah. Right? Marshawn Lattimore has consistently won that battle, although he did not this year. He was not there in week 17.
Right.
And he got beat in week 4. Like, that was one of the first times that I would look at those head-to-head matchups and say, Mike got him.
Right.
You know, the numbers don't jump off the page for Mike Evans, but he won clean in a couple matchups. There was one play that Mike got him and Marshawn would tell you he got pushed, and maybe he did, but there's a lot of hand fighting that goes on there. And Mike won. Marshawn goes down and grabs Mike Evans' leg. Mike's just, that's literally what it is. The only way to describe it. He just reached out and grabbed him and pulled him to the ground because it was either off, it was either get a pass interference penalty or a walk in touchdown. But Marshawn, his situation is going to be fascinating to watch over the next couple months. And I am going to toot my own horn here because, you know, I was talking about the Saints potentially trading Marshawn before it was cool. You know, I was in like week 17. I was like, I think when we get to the offseason, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Marshawn and whether the Saints should trade him. And the question now becomes, you know, what would be reasonable? And Jason Fitzgerald from Over the Cap, now he posted something today, which was, you know, basically what is the cap implication of trading Marshawn Lattimore? And Jason is, you know, he's really good at the cap stuff. He is one of those like doom and gloom guys who always seems to overplay the bleakness of the Saints salary cap situation. And this is another one where it's like, he's kind of projecting this as the cap makes it so they have to trade Marshawn. And I think that's where there's a disconnect in that. It's not like they're not trading Marshawn because of the cap. They're not really saving that much against the cap, but like it's not, that's not the reason, you know? And so when you come at it from that perspective, and I'll link this in the show notes so you can take a longer look at it. And there is a lot of great information in there. When you look at it from the perspective he's coming at it with, you'll be like, well, they have to make a trade. So what is someone going to give them in that scenario? And I think that's the difference, is you don't have to make the trade. You're shopping Marshawn because there's value. And if the value's not there,
right,
you keep them. Now, the question becomes, do you have to make that trade? And you get into the CJ Gardner-Johnson scenario from a couple of years ago where there was no real good deal on the table, but you couldn't keep him on the roster because of this and that, because it wasn't, you know, the locker room was kind of crumbling around him. And it was like, you just got to ship him out of town and you end up getting next to nothing for him. I don't think that's the situation you're in with Marshawn. I could be wrong.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Yeah, I never got that he was this disgruntled guy. It was kind of perplexing not being able to talk to him all season because he wasn't really available at all during the regular season. I think we talked about it before. It was like once during training camp you got to talk to Marshawn, and that was it.
He's never been a talkative guy. He's always been a lead-by-example guy, quiet, does the work.
But I feel like when he does talk, he still says something, even though it might be really low. But
yeah,
he's not going to give you the, you know, your NFL yearbook answer. He says things.
You do have to lean in to hear it, but he will say things. He will give you insight. And I think that's part of the reason he doesn't like to talk a ton, because he's not good. Yeah, he's not good at saying things without betraying the honest truth behind an answer that he probably shouldn't give in that context, if that makes sense, right? Like there are certain guys who have made it an art form, Cam Jordan, for example, of talking without really revealing information that he doesn't want to get out there, right? Alvin's another example of a guy who can't help himself.
He
talks and he's going to be honest with you because he doesn't have any other gear. You know, he's not going to beat around the bush. He's going to tell you how he feels. And I think Marshawn's kind of like that. And he knows that it's just not noise he wants to create. So he doesn't like to talk anyway. But so the question becomes, okay, do you have to trade him? And I think this is where I kind of land on it. Like, if the deal is there that you want, then sure, you trade him. But if his market does not materialize in the way that Jason Fitzgerald seems to think it will not, then it becomes a no. DA, Mickey, whatever, you know, with the training staff, the medical staff, whatever it is that is driving this wedge, you need to fix it, because you're not just trading this star cornerback to trade a star cornerback. You got to figure out a way, because if you end up trading, so I'll just read you the excerpt. Basically, what might the compensation look like? So this is a quote. He says, probably not too much. Jalen Ramsey, who was just 1 year older, was traded for a third round pick and a third round tight end who never saw the field in 2 years. Lattimore is not considered as good as Ramsey and has a far more extensive injury history. Both cases are going to be seen as salary dumps, which lessens the value. So you might be looking at something like a fifth round pick being the base compensation. The benefit for the Saints is because this would be a trade that happens post-draft, it may be easier to get conditions on availability and team success that could get it close to the Ramsey range. The Saints would probably want to get the trade done before the start of camp, which would limit their liability in the event of Lattimore being injured in camp. Now, I agree with that last part, and I agree with the fact that you're probably going to want to do this post-June 1. Now, one of the things he notes there, which is, I think, accurate, is if you're the Saints, you are going to couch this with like, yeah, okay, a team is like, hey, he's been hurt the last 2 years. We are a little hesitant to make a massive trade for a guy who has not been available. And so how do you get around that? I think this is going to end up being, if it's made, one of those trades where there's a playtime caveat, where if he plays X percent of the snaps, it goes up from whatever it is to the next round. So if they, it's like, okay, we'll give you a third, but if he plays 80% of the snaps, it turns into a second, right? Something like that. Like, that's how you get a little bit more value without, you know, while also protecting the other team in the event of an injury, right? So I think that's the type of thing when you're negotiating that makes it a little more complicated in terms of that compensation. That said, a fifth round pick, absolutely not. That's in the range of, okay, Dennis, figure this out, because that's not going to move the needle for us. We are not just trading him to save money, to save cap space. One of the reasons I think you're trying to trade him is because you want to open up a lane for Alante Taylor to be the outside corner. Like, to me, that's the biggest incentive beyond anything that might be interpersonal in the locker room. It's not about the money. And that's why when you talk about why it's annoying to hear all these salary cap hell bleak takes, is because that's why you end up saying, well, this is what they have to do because they have no other option. And that's not true. Beyond that, you know, the Jalen Ramsey comparison, I don't think Jalen Ramsey has been head and shoulders better than Marshawn at any point in his career, especially not in the last several years. So I think, you know, you got a third round pick for Jalen Ramsey going to the Dolphins. I think that's kind of where you're at. You want to get, like, if I can negotiate a deal where they say, hey, it's a third round pick with a playtime incentive where he plays X number, and you're going to try to get that, you know, the lower you can get that, the better it is for you as the team trading him. And so it moves up to a second round. It's kind of like the Calvin Ridley thing where if they worked in a thing where it was like, if he gets re-signed to the Jaguars, then the Falcons get a higher round pick. They got around that by allowing him to hit free agency. Because that's that, you know, there's always going to be things. And so you'll get into a situation where it's like, oh, week 18, they're going to not play Marshawn to stay out of that. So it's, you know, there's always these things. But I mean, I don't think that looking at this from a cap perspective is the way to go. Now, one other thing that is in this deal that is interesting. And that, I don't know the exact numbers and how it would break down. Jason does a good job in that article, so check that out. But, you know, with the option bonus, it's a different way to restructure a contract than the Saints have previously done. And I think one of the reasons you do that in terms of making it tradable is, so, hey, you're trading a team, you're trading Marshawn to a team with a ton of cap space. The compensation could end up being a little lower if they accept that that option kicker and they eat that contract and it gets it off your books. Whereas you also have the option where if it's a team that doesn't have a ton of cap space and can't eat that money, then you eat that money and their compensation has to be a little higher, right? And so it's just, I think that just gives you another lever to pull where, okay, let's find a way to work this out, you know? And so it's like, okay, you'll give us a second and we eat the money, or you'll give us a third and you eat the money, that sort of thing. You know what I mean? So I just think there's a lot more to it and you're going to learn down the road here. But I do think, and we talked about this in a previous episode, if you make the trade after the draft, your chances of getting higher compensation are much greater, because it's just the, you know, it's just human nature. You're going to trading a 2024 pick a couple months before the draft, it's going to be a lot harder to pry their fingers off that pick than it will be in, you know, mid-June to say, hey, give us your second rounder a year from now. Like,
right.
And you don't even know when that's going to be. In your mind, you're competing for a Super Bowl. So you're talking about that being the end of the third round. And so, like, and this, that just becomes a little easier versus a team that maybe has like the mid round second right now, who's thinking like, oh, but I really want a guy. I know who I want in that spot. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot to it, but it's going to be the talk of the town.
Yeah. My only problem with the post June trade, obviously, is just for a guy like Dennis Allen, not knowing, hey, am I going to be around next year to use that pick?
But it's not about Dennis. And if Dennis doesn't want to make that trade, then he needs to work it out with Marshawn, right? Like, they need to find a way to make Marshawn a productive member of that locker room. And maybe that's happened. We don't know.
Right. Is the big issue then, though, what happens? Obviously, there's that need at the nickel, you know, slot, and we don't want Alante back there next year.
I don't think that's going to be the biggest determining factor. I really don't. I don't think a player you draft is going to be the biggest determining factor. I think it's just going to be a question of how his market develops and whether a deal is on the table that is palatable. And what the biggest thing the Saints need to do is make sure that they don't have to make that trade. Make sure that they can go into negotiations saying, if you want Marshawn, come and get him, but we are perfectly fine keeping him. Like, right, that needs
not,
to be known.
Giving away like they did with CJ Gardner-Johnson, because that trade was a joke.
Yeah, and it has to happen. And I think what Jason pointed out is if you're going to make that trade, you really want to make a decision prior to the start of camp, prior to a chance for him to go out on the field and roll his ankle or do something that, you know, it becomes an issue, or, you know, does a holdout or does something that, you know, kind of forces your hand, right? Because until you get to camp, until you get to this mandatory part of camp where he's got to be on the field, and if he is going to hold out and say and demand a trade, that's when it would happen. Like, you can pretend it's not, right? So even if you aren't able to mend a fence or whatever, you can still play that your card that way to other teams. Now you get to camp and you see like what CJ was doing, right? Throughout camp saying, pay me. I'm going to withhold my services. I'm going to make a pick six and then go run into the cooling tent and show you up.
Right.
Like, Once teams see that, the picture starts to develop of like, yeah, they're going to move them, so we're not going to budge. They will. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
No, and obviously I think there's going to be a very there's going to be a lot of teams interested in a guy like Marshawn Lattimore if he is available for trade.
You'd think so. But what if there isn't? You know, and that's what we're kind of find out over the next few months. Yeah. Because, you know, I do think that the injuries for the last 2 years are going to be tough to, like, you look, the other teams are going to say, hey, we don't know what we're going to get. We don't know if we're going to get a guy who comes in and gets hurt and misses half the season, right? And they're going to use that as leverage, because why wouldn't they? Right?
You know, obviously I'm going to be on the Saints side of this. And to be fair, you know, that 2022 injury with the ruptured spleen was kind of,
it was a freak injury,
right? A freak injury, whatever you want to call it. It's not the norm.
Yeah, but like, yeah, and I agree with that.
It happened.
But other teams are going to be like, this is a guy who has missed half of each of the last two seasons with injuries.
Yeah.
So whether you say it's a freak injury and, you know, it's not predictive, I'm still trying to, you know, get myself the best deal. And so that's how I'm going to use that. I'm going to weaponize that in my favor and make it so you have to explain to me, you have to meet me where I am. And that's where the, you know, some of these caveats and incentives and whatever will come into play. But that's going to be, we can move off that right now, because that's going to be a conversation for the next several months.
Right.
But is there anything else you want to hit before we go to break here?
No, I will say, if it's a fifth round pick, I definitely ain't doing that deal. No way, no how, no way at all.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that if Marshawn ends up getting moved for a fifth rounder, that is an abject failure. It is a failure by the organization, because it indicates that not only were you unable to generate a market for Marshawn, you were unable to come to an accord where you felt like he could be on this roster for whatever reason. Because that's the only reason you'd make that trade. Again, it's not about the cap. The only reason you'd make that trade is because the situation with Marshawn and whatever in the locker room is untenable.
Yeah.
That's the only reason you'd make that trade. It's the only reason you made the CJ trade. They would have loved to keep CJ and have him play out that final year of his contract if they could. They didn't get anything out of it. They traded him not for cap savings, not for draft assets. They traded him to get him out of the building. And you need to avoid a scenario where that happens again. That's what the Saints need to do. Whatever happens from there, I can live with it.
And I love CJ Gardner-Johnson, obviously, but you know, with a player like Marshawn Lattimore, that's way more trade value right there.
It should be.
Should be, yes.
Right, exactly. But all right, let's wrap up that segment. This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. Him at Steve Geller, WWL. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching us on YouTube, or you just like to watch us on YouTube, hit us up at WWL Sports. Ring the bell, subscribe. We're getting ticking up closer to 10,000 subscribers. We're getting close. Everyone counts. But all right, we're going to come back. We're going to dive a lot more into the NFLPA report card that came out last week. The second segment we're going to go into the Saints grades. The final segment we're going to dive into what earns an F in the NFL, the National F League, the National Fail League. What gets that grade? And there's some pretty interesting anecdotes around the league.
I'm sure glad we're not talking Bengals, because man, they had a lot of terrible grades.
There are a few pretty bad ones. Only the Dolphins get A's and everything. What are they paying the players anyway? Well, I guess they're paying them their contracts, so you know that. But all right, this is Inside Black and Gold. We'll be right back.